So this session is bringing three voices together. It's bringing the EAUC, Scotland and wider UK voice together, alongside the Australasian compasses towards sustainability, our sister organisation in Australasia, and with our sister organisation in North America, ASG, Association of Advancement of Sustainability in Higher Education. So the apology is that the chair of ACTS, Liam Denby, I understand is ill and hasn't been able to join us on video conference, but the delightful news is that Megan is. So when someone who knows what they're doing with technology presses various buttons, we'll bring Megan in. So let's crack on. But I'm delighted though that the apology is actually no walkout, so that's something just because Scotland manager, our well-respected colleague Sarah Lee, was at the ACTS conference only, 3 weeks ago or so? And so stepping in for Leanne is just going to give us a little snapshot of what life is like for universities and they call them TAFEs or colleges in New Zealand and Australia. So Sarah, over to you.
There were around 150 people, approximately. There are 84 institutions, both universities and TAFEs in Australia, and 11 universities, polytechnics, in New Zealand. So, you know, if you look at the scale of what we have for the UK, as opposed to what they have for Australasia, they have very big organisations, very big institutions, as opposed to sort of what we have of probably smaller hubs, although with the colleges joined together, that's probably not quite the case so much in Northern Scotland. So throughout the conference, we did talk about COP. I know that's come up today, the Convention of Parties. The Sustainable Development Goals was firm on the agenda as well. They've had a lot of changes in government. They've changed from somebody who was quite anti-climate as a prime minister. They have somebody in who's far more susceptible to it now. However, he is an acting prime minister at the moment, so can't really make all those promises that he would like to try and deliver. But the hope is there that things will change and things will get better. In terms of, I think a lot of the states-based program that they had was around behavior change and recycling and innovation for those types of solutions that were available. There's quite a lot of sessions around learning and teaching, which I thought were quite interesting, and they have opportunities and hubs for trying to engage from an international perspective as well. They do have struggles with budgets. I know particularly two institutions, one in Sydney and one in Melbourne, who have had teams cut recently, particularly big teams. So no one's safe. We're all in the same boat. Unfortunately, I was ill while I was there, so I lost my voice, which is great for a networking conference. But I was able to croak out one of their Green Gown Awards. So at the conference dinner, they have their Green Gown Awards for Australasia, and I presented the Student Engagement Award for that. So I don't want to go on too long because I know Megan is waiting, but I just thought that was a bit of a snapshot of what's going on in Australia and New Zealand, and we are continuing to work to try and share our resources so that we can benefit from that in Scotland and the UK as well.
I don't think she can see that, I guess.
Yeah.
Right. Can she now hear us. Right, yay! But it's we've got one plug that has to be in for her to hear us and out for us to hear her. So it's good stuff.
Are we ready to go?
We're ready to go. Right, so over to you, Megan.
Hi, everybody. Hopefully you can hear me.
Yeah, far ahead.
Okay, I'm going to speak to you now. As Ian said, I'm Megan Faison. I'm our main executive director of AISHE, and happy to be with you here today. I'm based in Philadelphia. I wish I was with you guys in person. My two disclaimers before I get in here are that I'm really hoping the side ring doesn't go by or my doorbell doesn't ring, because then you'll hear my dog in the background. But hopefully that doesn't happen in the next 7 minutes. So I'm fresh off of our annual conference at the end of October as well. AISHE has an annual conference, and this year we actually celebrated our 10-year anniversary, which was pretty exciting. We actually had our largest conference to date. We had 2,300 people come to Minneapolis, Minnesota for our conference this year, which was themed Transforming Sustainability Education. So in addition to the fact that this was our 10-year anniversary, we were very excited. One of the other differences, despite the fact that it was, I think, 200 people larger than last year's, we had a huge focus on academics this year. And while we've tried to really incorporate academics every single year, I think the theme of transforming sustainability education led to a lot more proposals, presentations, from the academic community, which was actually a really nice nice shift from the past when it's been a bit more operationally focused, which certainly was still a component this year of our content. But the academics was definitely sort of a focus, which was really great. Another aspect of our conference this year, which was really exciting, was the fact that we had nearly 20 countries represented. And we had an international networking luncheon, which Ian was actually able to attend, and was able to just hear from so many different people around the world and the efforts that they're working on in their respective countries to advance sustainability in higher education. So incredibly inspiring work, and as Ian mentioned briefly, and I think we'll talk about in just a few minutes, really inspiring given the fact that we've created this global alliance of sustainability networks of higher education working together to really try and collectively advance our individual missions. The other piece that I wanted to mention is we have a student summit. This is typically a part of our conference. Brought together about 600 students from across different colleges and universities. And Charlotte Bonner, actually from the National Union of Students at the UK, was one of our keynotes and did a fantastic job. So it was very nice to be able to have some UK representation there. Ian actually also led a plenary session for us on the business case of sustainability in higher ed, which was really fantastic as well. And hopefully we can send that video around. So the conference itself, I think, was really great, continuing to sort of build momentum for the movement in general. There was a sense of positivity at this year's conference that, honestly, I can't quite put my finger on what changed this year from past years, but I think there was sort of this renewed sense of momentum from within our community. I did sort of have the challenge of our conference starts on a Sunday with a big keynote presentation and a big kickoff of our exhibit hall, which this year we have about 100 exhibitors. And Sunday morning, the session was supposed to start around like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Sunday morning, I get a phone call from our keynote presenter, David Orr from Oberlin College, and he said, I can't fly out. My flight's been canceled. So that was led to a little bit of scrambling to try and find a replacement keynote with about 3 hours notice. But we did it. We were able to find a board member to step in and, interestingly enough, deliver a fantastic presentation that led a lot of our board members asking, like, what does he do when he actually has more time to prepare? Because it was fantastic. But I would say another theme that sort of popped out in addition to the academic component and actually our replacement keynote, Stephen Mulkey, who's the president of Unity College in Maine, spoke a lot about incorporating sustainability throughout the curriculum and really trying to bring everyone throughout the institution together. And I know we've been talking today about shared responsibility. A sort of a theme or a trend that we've been noticing at the AISHE conference for the past couple of years is not just for a sustainability staff person to come or maybe a faculty or a couple of academic folks, but institutions are sending teams of people, right? So a facilities person, a faculty member, a student representative. They're sending teams of people to be able to get as much information, as their tools, resources, as much as possible, to be able to help go back to their campus, meet as a collective to figure out everything they've learned and how they can implement it locally. So that team approach, I've seen it done in workshops, which has worked really well too, but I think recognizing that some institutions sent upwards of like 20 different representatives to the HE conference was really fantastic. And I think, as Ian mentioned earlier, the fact that this is a shared responsibility, that we need everybody throughout the campus to be involved so that the institutions can really embrace sustainability wholeheartedly, is a really important strategy. So with that, I want to pause, because I know this is the end of your day, and I don't want to be the one that delays the raffle. So I'll look back to Ian to see what we're moving to next.
Thank you. Thank you, Megan. Excellent. Yes, so just a little bit about from the EAUC perspective. I mean, our conference isn't quite so fresh, and it was 6 months ago at Leeds. But lots of synergies there. If I just take the examples of the three keynotes that we had, one of them was John Robinson, who's an amazing man who crosses the academic operational boundaries at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. And you know, those of us who know about John, you know, he's really pushed hard that universities and colleges as living laboratories. It was really great sitting there earlier hearing about Fife College's Green Parlour and hearing about what Edinburgh University have done on that living lab. And I think that's such an exciting space for us. Because how do we build those empowered partnerships across the organisation? You know, we've got the academic side, research side, we've got the operational side, we've got students sandwiched in between. You know, how can we actually bring a whole new dimension to their learning? How can we actually rewrite the way we teach and repackage and represent it and give them real hands-on stuff? And I think Living Lab is such an exciting area. I love the AUC to do a lot more on Living Lab. But something that, you know, we were talking with Michelle after the session today was, you know, it's going to be genuinely led by the academics and really owned by the students. And that's one of the challenges, is how can we empower and bring in the operational sustainability staff to really do what they can do there, but we need it owned by the academics. So I think that's a really strong agenda. And it was really heartening to hear Megan talking about again, a typical sort of northern, western, Anglo-Saxon type culture, really reaching out to the teaching and the learning, because that is what our universities and colleges are all about, and really trying to overtly bring them into this. And it's a challenging space now. You know, I mean, I for my sins, live in England, and you know, there's huge structural changes going on with how universities are funded and organised, and quality assurance and leadership. You know, everything that we knew 2 years ago, gone or going. You know. So how in that space where academics were starting to get the messages from HEA, QAA, really interesting work done, you know, a year and a half ago, but that's all gone poof. So how can we rebuild that? And then another thing that we need to look at is listening to different voices. And I'm going to mention this once or twice. It's the language that we use. It's, you know, do we just stand here and say, hey, come on, sustainability, listen to me, and then verbal on? Or are we going to actually find new ways of connecting our agendas with the agendas of other people? Are we going to talk to them in their terms? Are we going to talk to them in their language? So one of the speakers was Crystal Lehman, who represented the people of the Alberta tar sands in Canada. A really provocative message. Yeah, clearly there's a carbon and an oil message there, but there's a profoundly social message there to us. And I think the social aspects of sustainability, we really haven't fully grasped yet, and brought into this discussion and brought in a whole new world of energy and allies across our institutions. So you know, I think that's where our conference went. And then the last theme was, and this will be picked up at Bristol if you're coming to Bristol next May. Bristol is actually the first time a British city has become the European Green Capital. And it's all about, well, most of us are going to be living in cities in the future. So what is the role of a college? What's the role of a university in delivering a more empowered, connective, cohesive, viable, environmentally sound city? How are we going to travel? How are we going to feed ourselves? And that was another theme of the Leeds conference, but it's being picked up very much at Bristol, because becoming that European green city really has brought the government part of the city and the university part and the college part and the employers part together and going, do you know what, we're in this together, and do you know what, none of us can do this on our own if we're going to make Bristol a beacon for sustainability, because we're going to have to get our cities right. So those were our themes. And then I suppose just really to finish off, we will hopefully have a few other questions. Is at Leeds, actually we had 20 of the world's university and college sustainability networks there, which was a great feat. Yeah, a big carbon price. But actually, we suddenly clocked, hold on a minute, we've got the North Americans, we've got the Australasians also in the room, we know from people from all over Africa and China and South America, all over Europe and Scandinavia, and we actually said, you know what, we can't do this on our own. We actually need to find the commonality that we've got as university and college networks, really championing this cause of putting sustainability into what we teach, into what we research, into how we procure, into how we run our estates, into how we lead and govern ourselves, etc. So we actually just said, right, let's find a way of relating to each other. So we formed, as Megan mentioned, a network of networks. So these three organisations, along with, at the time, 17, became one. We formed a global alliance. And, you know, it's been so heartening, because what we learned at the Earth Summit at Rio a few years ago was, if we actually go speaking with one voice, actually, it's easier for the UN or our own ministers of education and environment to hear our voice and actually to become clearer about the value we bring. You know, we're the worst at actually recognising and celebrating and trumpeting the value of education in universities and colleges. School education is very well recognised. We've now got a sustainable development goal on access to, you know, primary and secondary education, quality education. But it doesn't actually really embrace what we bring with our pioneering research, with our climate change solutions from, you know, our teaching. And as John Robinson would say, our sandbox. We've got a unique opportunity to bring alive what we're researching, with what we're teaching, with actually what we're doing in our campuses like the place here. So this global alliance has actually just rocketed. And one of the first actions we've done is we've got a unique coming together of things here. This is my key message. We have a unique opportunity here. We've got COP coming along, conference of parties on climate change, the UN Climate Change Convention in 2 or 3 weeks in Paris. So we actually wrote an open letter. I don't know if any of you have seen it. That's actually the URL to it. We started with our 20 networks, and then we grew to 40 networks. We're now at 60 world networks for universities and colleges. We represent 10,000 plus universities and colleges. Who knows how many millions of students in that? And we're basically saying this. We're proud of the contribution that our college, our university makes to understanding the climate, the changing climate, and actually being at the forefront of finding solutions for it. But you know what? We want to do more, and we can do more, but we need your help, COP21. We need the ministers to get a recognition of the value that we bring and to support us more with policy structure, with funding. So it's a very positive, constructive approach, and it's had huge impact. You know, I handed the letter, the first iteration of the letter, with about 40 university and college networks having signed it 3 weeks ago at UNESCO, to the General Secretary of COP21. And he went, ooh. And the UN agencies went, ooh. Okay, and we're hearing the university and the college voice coherently, clearly. They're clearly a player here. They've clearly got something to give, they've got something to say, and they can help us delivering it. So it's actually made really good ripples. And then the final thing is we have a special relationship here between ACTS and ADACI and the AUC. 2 or 3 years ago, we launched all of our members can freely access all of their members' resources. And we're committing again, Sarah in Australia, myself in North America, committing again to actually looking again, how can we bring better value to you here in this room through our relationships? It's not just about swanning off to various places and producing all sorts of carbon and costs. It's about how can we bring that learning from similar cultures, similar language organisations around the world to actually help empower you. And one of the things that came out of it is the AUC wrote a business case guide for university governors, and I want to do one for colleges next. And actually, that really resonated in North America, so we're now looking at doing a transatlantic one. So I think there is a unique opportunity that we're standing on. This conference is on the dawn of COP21. We've just had the most amazing sustainable development goals being agreed to. Now we need to support our governments in implementing them. We are part of that delivery, but we're also part of the checking mechanism. We've had the Pope's encyclical, which, you know, has amazed me with the impact that it's had. It has your world leaders literally on their knees going, this is what the Pope says. This is a new voice we're hearing. And we've also got, if you're an academic, the UNESCO Global Action Programme. And if you're not aware of that, you know, get aware of that. There's a really powerful new programme coming out of Europe, out of the UN, or to actually help, picking up from the decade of ESD that we've just been through, to actually, you know, really building on that and ensuring that we're building sustainability into what we teach. So we've got sustainable development goals, we've got the Global Action Plan, post-encyclical, COP21. It's really a unique opportunity. I think in Scotland you're starting to go, ooh, yikes, you know, money's getting tighter, agencies are, you know, positioning. In Wales, Northern Ireland, and in England, been through that, mergers like you've had in EFI, mergers left, right, and centre, agencies disappearing, a lot of instability as we get used to a competitive marketplace, whatever we think of that. But actually, there is an opportunity here. So don't be overwhelmed by the changes and fears. This is an opportunity that we have. So I'll stop there. Do you have any questions that you'd like to raise just in our last few minutes? And we can bring Megan in as well for that. It's actually quite good if you did bring a question in for Megan as well. Right, any questions on any of that? Where's all of this taking us? What more can we learn from North America? David there?
You can always rely on me.
Yeah.
I was looking at the second nature website yesterday. That's one of the NGOs which I understand supports the American College and University President's Time Commitment Program, which you lead as well. Thank you. And there's a little bit about how that's evolving. So it's not. I invite you to share with us how the climate commitment is evolving in the United States and broadening out.
Did you hear that question? Okay.
Dave, it was a question from David Somerville at the University of Edinburgh. The question was, how is university climate commitment evolving in North America? It was referenced to Second Nature and the commitment that they made. So where do you see that going? Megan, you're on now.
Okay, the President's climate commitment, I think, is the question. I'm sorry, it's a little bit muffled on this end. Where do I see it going? So AC and Second Nature actually work very closely together. And just within the past couple of months, Second Nature has actually sort of unveiled this new branding campaign. And instead of just having a specific climate commitment, they're actually moving forward with several different commitments around sustainability, carbon in particular. It's interesting because the President's Climate Commitment, HE was actually one of the organizations that helped to launch it back in 2006, HE Second Nature and Eco America. And initially, there was a lot of success. There was probably over 700 signatories. Over the past several years, though, I think there's been a little bit of a decline, not only in the uptake, but also within the institutions being able to basically meet their commitments. So Second Nature basically has taken a lot of the feedback from their signatories and basically tried to say, what more can we do, and sort of packaging it in a little bit more of a broader sense. So I would point you to their website. Second Nature's website has some new information about their new commitments. And it's, instead of sort of, I would say it's a transition from the PCC to a bit more of a stronger commitment and a bit more of a broader commitment. So while the President's Climate Commitment in particular is no longer sort of being promoted or is something that Second Nature is looking for signatories around, they are looking for signatories and supporters of these higher, really higher value, I think, goals and commitments from institutions. So you can check out their website. They just announced that, I think it was in October. So this is sort of like late-breaking news within the past couple of months. So hopefully that helps answer the question. Apologies, it was hard to hear.
Thank you. Any other questions? Megan, that was a question about will the Global Alliance have a presence at COP21 and what do we hope to get out of it? So Gillian, actually, wherever she is going. She's through there, she. Oh, you're going as well. I'm sort of...
I'm Sarah.
Yeah, so there's a very strong Global Alliance presence there. I'm personally probably not going to go. I feel my carbon footprint is actually bad enough. But actually, I think an awful lot of the impact is done in the run-up to it. There's a huge amount going on in COP, and what the Global Alliance has been really good at is linking it all up together, because there's a lot of discordant, apparently competing voices saying different things. And I think a really powerful coming together is between the university and college sector and the students. And I forgot to mention SOS. I don't know if Jamie or any of you have mentioned SOS at this conference, Students Organising for Sustainability, which is a parallel student network alliance that's growing. And it's, you know, we've actually really tried to embrace that, because what we need to have is ensure that the university college voices and student voices are linking. Yeah, they need their space, but they're linking. So the open letter, which you saw a link to, and you still can endorse it if your principal is interested in doing that, is actually being presented at most of those events by someone in the UN, which is really powerful. But actually, do you know what, in a more basic way, I just think the value has been in sometimes it's hard work getting people to collaborate. Sometimes it's hard work bringing people together, even university and college sustainability networks, because some of them are global, some of them might feel they're being, you know, encroached upon or whatever, and we're actually saying, you know what, we're not going to have the impact that we could have if we don't align and speak with one voice. So for me, it's even regardless of the impact at COP, and I actually am quietly optimistic from what I'm hearing, although, you know, you do hear the old scare story about education coming out of the framework convention on climate change, and I'm going to have to be in the middle of it. I actually think it's a real lesson to ourselves. Do you know what? No one's going to listen to us. No one is going to recognise the value unless we stand as one and tell people, show people the value. Are you saying 1 minute? Yeah. So one final question. Jamie, SOS. I think it's worth just telling us a little bit about SOS. Sorry to pounce on you, but it is a really strong message.
The reverse way.
No pressure.
Hello, I'm Jamie from NUS. So SOS was launched with the EVA project a month ago. It isn't an NUS thing, it's an international thing that's been set up by organisations like NUS, and we've been involved. It stands for Students Organising for Sustainability. And the vision is that students, groups like ours, will collaborate on things like research, campaigns and communication. So we know what UK students want because of the NUS HGA data. We know that students want institutions to take this as a priority and to learn about sustainability themselves. Students ask different questions, Dutch students ask different questions. So by collaborating through global research, we'll hopefully start to find a voice at the EU and UN level. But that's just on the research. We're also thinking about how we collaborate on campaigns. And actually going back to our roots when NUS was formed 93 years ago, it was part of the peace movement after the First World War. It was all about international cooperation. It's kind of a bit strange these days that we've got Skype in there. As we can see maybe on the screen, all this instant technology. But yet, Ian says global cooperation is quite difficult, so we're all just so busy doing stuff in our own countries. So it's crazy, we've all reinvented the wheel, because NUS is all over the world struggling with the same agenda that we're struggling with. So we've already now got, so this is a really good news story to end on, 50 organisations from 20 countries on 6 continents involved, and we had a launch at the Asia Conference just last week, the week before. Which followed our launch down in Cornwall and the EVA project with Kim Smith and Jonathan Porritt. So it's really awesome to find that.
Great. And please join me in thanking Sarah and Megan.